and welcome to the very first episode of my new podcast, Life with No Plot. My name is Denise, and I will be your host. On this podcast, we will basically just geek out a lot about our favorite books, plus share some teasers, do a weekly top 10 list, and then share reviews of books, both old favorites and brand new releases. Let's get started. So first off, I want to tell you just a little bit about myself and how this podcast came to be. Again, my name is Denise, and this is actually an extension of my blog of the same name, Life with No Plot, which I started back in 2011. And let's see, what else about me? I love books, in case you couldn't tell. I am a married mom of two teenagers and two cats, and I love books. That's really mostly all you need to know. I'm a book geek. I'm a theater geek. I'm a book geek? That's the main thing you really need to know about me. So I started the blog back in 2011, like I said, and then especially over the last year, it's really just grown, and it's been really fun to kind of get to know a lot of other book bloggers and be part of that community. So I thought about actually turning this blog into a podcast for a while just because it seemed like kind of a natural step. And besides, the timing just seemed right with some other projects that I've been working on. So I just decided to jump in and do it. Why not? So why a podcast instead of just sticking to the blog? I love blogging. It's so much fun. And again, I've met so many wonderful people, but I love podcasts. I listen to a bunch of them at work all the time. I've always wanted to do one myself. And a few years ago, I had a friend, her name is Jess, and she and I did a podcast together called Bibliophiles Anonymous. We had so much fun doing it, but it was also really challenging. Partly because we live several states away from each other, and at the time, we were also working opposite work shifts, so half the time, the other one was awake while the other one was sleeping or at work, and trying to schedule time to record was a nightmare. But I learned a lot about just podcasting in general, how to record things, how to edit things, so I just figured it was time for me to give it another go. And also, I'm hoping that kind of as things go on, if the podcast grows a little bit, then maybe I can have some guest co-hosts come on, maybe if Jess would be available to come back, or maybe some of the other book bloggers that I've corresponded with and worked with over the past year or so. You know, if any of them would be interested, that would be something that I would love to have. So it may not just be me all the time, although it's going to be, you know, the beginning, so hi. And we'll just see what happens as we go on. Like I said, it's definitely on my to-do list for the future, but we'll see what happens. And then a quick note just on the name of the podcast and the blog. I've had people ask me where I got the name from, and, you know, Life with No Plot. To be honest, I just picked it because I thought it was a very accurate description of my life. I'm technically a grown-up. But, you know, when I was a kid, I always assumed that when I was a grown-up, I would instantly understand what life was all about, and I would have everything planned out, and that so did not happen. I think most people really experience this as they get older, especially, like, I would see my parents, and they always just seemed to have everything figured out. I've since learned that that was pretty much them faking it, but I didn't know it at the time. I just assumed that when you became a grown-up, you just knew things, and that's not true necessarily. So my life, it has no plot. There is no fixed storyline you normally see in a book or a short story or anything. My life has absolutely no plot because things are always unpredictable, they're always changing, and half the time I have no idea what's going on. So the name, it just seemed appropriate. So now you know a little bit about me and a little bit about the podcast. Let's move on to our first segment. So the first segment for the podcast will be current reads, and this is, very simply, the books that I'm currently reading. And right now I'm reading four books. Two of them are actually going on blog tours this month, and the first one of those is Eve 2.0 by Winter Lawrence. And this one's really fun because it's these teenagers that get sort of trapped inside a video game, and they have to try and get out somehow. and I love video games on top of loving books, so it's a perfect combination of those things. The other book that's going on tour is Shantalo by Kara Martin, and this one's actually really creepy. It's about this guy who has been having these nightmares, and in the nightmares is this girl that he doesn't know who she is, but then he meets her in real life. And what happens after that, I'm not sure. I actually only just started this one. But it's been really creepy, and I really dig that. So the next book that I'm reading right now is Queen by Amy Carter, and that's actually the third and final book in the Black Coat Rebellion series. And something that I've been doing this year, I had a challenge for myself called Complete the Series. I'm really bad at reading the first book in a series and then, oh, seeing something shiny over there somewhere and never reading any of the other books in the series. I went through my Goodreads list and found over 30 series that I have done this to. And so I set a goal for myself that I would try and complete 3 series off of that list of 30-something and try and complete those series this year. Well, I'm very happy to say that I actually did that. I read the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. I finished Phaedra's Trilogy by Jacqueline Carey, and I finished the Hex Hall series by Rachel Hawkins. So if I finish Queen, which I should because I'm actually almost done with it, that'll actually be the 4th series that I complete this year, which is great because then I'm actually trying to exceed that goal and knock some more off of that list because really, a lot of those books have been there for a long time and I just really need to finish those series because it's not that I didn't like the books. In most cases, I really enjoyed the book. It was just I got distracted by something else because I'm really bad at that. So I'm reading Queen, and then the 4th and final book that I'm reading right now is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince by J.K. Rowling. And this is actually, it's something that I'm doing on my blog, and I don't think I'm going to bring it onto the podcast, but I call it my chapter-along project. And basically what I've been doing with that, this is obviously not an original idea at all, but it's something that I wanted to give it a try, and it's been really fun to do so far. But I wanted to take a series that I was very familiar with. I've read the Harry Potter books many, many times, and I wanted to break them down and read and review and analyze and geek out about them one chapter at a time. So I've been doing that with the Harry Potter books, starting with Chamber of Secrets, because I read Sorcerer's Stone and I didn't do it then. I started with Chamber of Secrets, and I've been continuously doing it partway through Half-Blood Prince right now. So it's been really interesting, but it takes a long time because those books are very big and I'm usually only read like 4 chapters or so a week. So it takes a while to get through them. But I don't think that I'm going to bring that over here on the podcast, but I do recommend that you check it out on the blog if you're interested, because it has been a lot of fun to do. And, you know, rediscovering a much loved series that you've read many, many times, but now you're reading it in kind of a new way. It's been kind of interesting. So definitely check that out. Our next segment is the teaser of the week. And the way this works is basically either grab a current read or a book that you just recently finished and open to a random page, share a few sentences from somewhere on that page. Try not to include too many spoilers just in case, you know, someone wants to discover it on their own. But then just see if those sentences make you interested or curious. They're completely out of context, so you just have to take them for what they're worth and see if they make you want to read the book. So this week's teaser comes from Spellbound by Rachel Hawkins, and this is the 3rd and final book of the Hex Hall series. I had no idea what time it was, but my body told me it was roughly, ouch, this is way too early, o'clock. I'd only gotten a few hours of sleep. After Dad's announcement that I'd be heading to the freaking underworld the next day, no one had really been in the sleeping mood. Yeah, I can understand that. I wouldn't be in a sleeping mood if I had to go to the underworld. So, yeah, that's the teaser from Spellbound by Rachel Hawkins. Next up is our top 10 list for the week, And the topics for these top 10 lists will be coming from Jana at thatartsyreadergirl.com. And she hosts a Top 10 Tuesday every week. And her topic for this week are the top 10 books on my TBR that I'm avoiding. Now, just for anyone who's not a book blogger or isn't an avid reader, TBR stands for to be read. So that's our list of books that we want to read, but we haven't read them yet. And to be honest, I don't want to say that I avoid books, because that's not technically true. I'm very scatterbrained, and I just forget about books a lot. So since I don't technically, deliberately avoid books too much, I just really went through my Goodreads and tried to figure out what has been on my TBR the longest. Because, I mean, technically, if it's been there for a really long time, I've been kind of avoiding them. This is the top 10 list. It's in no particular order, but this is what I've got. The first one is Heart's Blood by Juliette Marillier. Marillier's Seven Waters series is on my list for complete the series, because I haven't completed that one. I've read the first book and I think half of the second one and never finished it. Now, Heart's Blood is not part of that series, but I don't know why I haven't read it yet, because Marillier is a beautiful writer. A lot of her stuff is very evocative, old fairy tales, which I really enjoy. So that's one that I really need to read. Number two on the list is Beauty Sleep, a retelling of Sleeping Beauty by Cameron Doakey. A few years ago, I went through a huge fairy tale retelling phase. I read so many different ones where they would take fairy tales and either tell it from a different perspective or make it more modern or what have you. Cameron Doakey has a ton of these stories, and I put every single one of them on my TBR and then immediately never read them. I don't know why, but she has them for Snow White, she has for Beauty and the Beast, she's got tons of them. I've never read one of them. Number three on the list is Princess of the Midnight Ball by Jessica Day George. This is another one of the fairy tale retellings that I just never read. And this book is actually the first book in a trilogy that's based on the 12 Dancing Princesses fairy tale. So not only is it a book that I'm avoiding, it's a whole series that I'm avoiding. But given how well I complete series, maybe that's not a bad thing. Book four on the list is Tiger Lily by Jodi Lynn Anderson. Another retelling. See, I told you, I went through so many of these fairy tale retellings back in the day. This is a retelling of Peter Pan, so not really a fairy tale. Well, no, Peter Pan's a fairy tale. It's a fairy. Tinkerbell. So, well, does it have to have a fairy to be a fairy tale, though? Not necessarily. That's actually a question. Is Peter Pan considered a fairy tale or just a children's story? What is Peter Pan? In any case, this book is actually a retelling of the Peter Pan story, but from Tiger Lily's perspective, I believe from before he met Tinkerbell. So I thought that sounded pretty interesting. Was it interesting enough for me to drop everything and read it? Clearly not. One day, I will read all of these someday, I promise. Number five on this list is Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe by Benjamin Alire Sayens. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that name wrong and I apologize. I first saw this book, I fell in love with the title because I just thought that the title sounded amazing. And the cover's really pretty too, which also helps. Whether or not I'm actually avoiding this one, there's been a lot of hype about this book. I have heard so many good things. I mean, pretty much everybody I've heard that's read it loves it. So whenever there's a book that gets that much hype, it does sometimes make you a little anxious about reading it because you're, you know, what, maybe I won't like it. Who knows? This is one I do want to read sometime because I know so many people who have read it and loved it, so hopefully I'll love it too when I read it. So number six on the list is The Golem's Eye by Jonathan Stroud. This is the second book in the Bartemius series, and yes, the Bartemius series is on my list of series to complete because I read the first one, The Amulet of Samarkand, and I never read any others. So I actually even found a copy of The Golem's Eye at the used bookstore. Have I read it? No. But I want to. And it's on the list. Number seven on this list is Perdido Street Station by China Mayville. And this is another one that I actually even own a copy of it. It's sitting on my bookshelf. And I've never read it. I think I got this because I had a list. I don't remember where the list came from now, but it was a list of the best books in science fiction. This book was listed pretty high up on it, and it was one of the ones I thought that I definitely should read it, and then I just never did. I don't know why. Number 8 on this list is Arrow's Flight by Mercedes Lackey. Okay, this is another one on the Complete the Series list. And this is the second book in a series. When I read the first book, I really enjoyed it. And Mercedes Lackey, she is just a legend in fantasy authors. And she has this huge overarching series, or it's not even a series, it's a whole world called Valdemar, and there's over 40 books in that series, but they're broken into trilogies and duologies and quartets. And so Arrow's Flight is the second book in the Heralds of Valdemar trilogy. So in theory, I should be able to just read that trilogy and still have a complete reading experience, but I just haven't done it yet. And again, I believe that I have a copy of it downstairs, but that doesn't mean I've read it yet, does it? So it's on the list, just like so many others are, and one of these days I will get to it. Also, side note, Mercedes Lackey, you remember my friend Jess that I had the podcast with before? Mercedes Lackey is one of her all-time favorite people. The Valdemar books are some of her favorite books of all time. So you can imagine she is very not happy with me about not reading these books, so I probably ought to get on that. Number 9 on the list, Codename Verity by Elizabeth E. Wine. This was a book I heard so much about it several years ago. I constantly saw it around the blogosphere with people who are reading it and reviewing it. I just never got around to reading it. I've heard nothing but good things about it, but I think also I had read a couple of other books that were set in World War II, and because of that subject matter, it's so heavy. I think I just kind of got overloaded on it and I couldn't read another one. I had to step away from that subject matter for a bit. So that might be why that one's still here. And then finally, number 10 on the list is Legend by Marie Lu. Now, I first found out about Marie Lu when I saw her speak at Y'all Fest. And if you don't know what Y'all Fest is, it is an annual book festival in Charleston, South Carolina. And they have dozens of authors that are there, and they do book signings and panels and just a whole bunch of stuff. And it's so much fun. The best thing is almost all of it is free. So you just get to wander around and buy books and stand in line for long periods of time to meet some of the authors. So just, you know, be prepared for that if you go. But I saw Marie on several panels, and she was just delightful. So I bought her book while I was there and haven't picked it up since. I don't know why. I don't know why I do this, but I just keep doing it all the time. But that's my top 10 list for this week. And if you have any books that you've been avoiding, then be sure to share them. And the same thing with the teasers from earlier. If you have a teaser you would like to share, you can share them on the website. You can also email me at lifewithnoplot@gmail.com. Anything that you want to share or email or comment over at the website, you can do that, and I can share that with you on the next episode. So always feel free to do that, because I love to hear what you guys are reading, or also to hear any feedback about any of the segments on the show. So this week I have several reviews to share, and I'm really excited about those. The first one that I'm going to share is actually the first two books in the International Sensory Assassin Network series by Mary Ting. And the second book, Helix, just came out on September 10th. So happy birthday! And I was lucky enough to get an early release copy from Expresso Book Tours for the blog tour that they're going on. And they were also nice enough to send me a copy of the first book as well, which is called ISAN, which stands for International Sensory Assassin Network. And so let's talk a little bit about the first book first, and we'll go into the second one. So the story is about this girl. Her name is Ava, and she works for this group called ISAN. She's been with them for several years. She was living with a single mom, and her mom passed away. She was in foster care, ended up in juvenile detention. She was found by some people of this organization and tested to find, and they found out that she had some sort of special genetics that made her qualify for their program. And so she wouldn't have to be in foster care anymore. She would get, you know, proper meals, a place to live, and all that. So she took them up on their offer, and they started going through all this training. It sounds very military-based, and they're injected with this substance called Helix, and it kind of heightens their senses and gives them superpowers. And Ava's superpower is that it builds this kind of map in her mind so that she can see the schematics of whatever building that she's in, and she can help her team find their way to either get out or to their objective or whatever she needs. She can actually visualize the map in her head, even if she's never been there before. So that's a pretty awesome superpower. And all of them have something slightly different. Like, some of them get super fast, some of them get super strong. One of them gets slightly clairvoyant, where she can kind of see what's going to happen several seconds before, so that she can warn people before something bad happens. But the problem is that Aisan isn't 100% honest with the story of what they're doing. And these girls, and they're all teenage girls that are in the program, they're going through all of this, and they're not really being given any other information. And some of them just kind of go with it. And others, you know, it's asking questions isn't really encouraged. But Ava starts getting these messages, kind of like Skype messages or instant messages, from somebody with the name Strider. And she has no idea who this person is. And she's never allowed to leave the Aisan compound until she finally, her team that she's been training with, gets assigned to go out, actually in the real world, on an actual mission to try and kill someone. It's the first time that she's ever had to do that. And they go out, and she meets up with this Strider person. And turns out his real name is Rhett, and he claims to know her and has known her for a long time. She has no idea who he is. And that kind of sets things up, because now you have this mystery. Who is this mysterious guy? And he also, there were a couple of other people with him as well, who all claim that they know Ava and that they know what's going on. But she has no idea who they are. She doesn't recognize them. And they try and explain to her that Aisan is not what she thinks it is. There's a lot of really bad stuff going on, and that she needs to get away. And they want to take her with them, which they do eventually. And this is going to start leading into the second book, Helix, because it's very difficult to really to separate them, because they go together so seamlessly. Ava starts to find out that her memories have been altered, and that she has a father who's still alive. She has a twin sister who is in Aisan somewhere. Also in the second book, it's really, really nice, because the first book is told all from Ava's perspective. It's all first-person narration. The second book is still first-person narration, but it switches between Ava and Rhett. And you find out that Rhett and his group, several of them, used to be in Aisan. They were able to escape, but Ava basically sacrificed herself so the rest of them could get away, which is why she was still there. And they did something to modify her memory so she wouldn't remember them at all. And that's kind of how we ended up in this situation. Turns out her and Rhett were a couple, and he's been trying to get her back because he is so in love with her and she doesn't remember him. But slowly, little snippets of memory start coming back, and the more that she learns about Aisan and about some of her own history that had been missing, the more those memories start to come back, and the more dedicated she is to trying to bring Aisan down so that they can't keep doing this to other kids. And there's also a couple of other organizations. There's this kind of resistance rebel group, but there's another a group that's being run through the government that's also trying to take them down. So it's very, there's a lot of espionage, and there's a lot of, it kind of almost reminded me of Mission Impossible, but with teenagers and superpowers and, you know, being injected with weird genetic substances. But it was really, everything was really fast-paced, and there were lots of twists and turns all throughout, so it was really hard to put the book down, because you needed to know what happened next, and you needed to find out, you never knew for sure who was telling the truth. You know, even right now, there's some people in the resistance who I don't know that they're good people, and there's some people within ISAN who I think do have the girl's best intentions at heart, which also makes the book very real, because it's not just black and white. There's definite like levels and different shades of gray. So it's not all just the bad guys versus the good guys. There's like lots of people that go back and forth. And I always like that in a book if it's done really well, because that's just the way that life is. You know, nothing's straightforward and simple like that. There's different levels. And so yeah, this book was a roller coaster, lots of action and adventure, and throw in a nice dystopian setting, and you got a great book and a great series. So I will definitely be looking for the next book when it comes out. I don't know for sure when that is, but definitely check out ISAN and Helix, again, by Mary Ting. So the last review for this episode is Captive by Amy Carter, and this is the second book in the Black Coat Rebellion series. I mentioned earlier that I am currently reading the third book, so this is the review for the second one. But I can't really talk about the second one too much without mentioning some plot points from book one, which is called Pawn. And essentially our main character, her name is Kitty Doe, and this is another kind of dystopian future set in America, and a lot of bad calamities have happened, and there's one family that's sort of the ruling family, and they are the Hart family, and Kitty is living kind of in the slums, but she has her boyfriend, his name is Benji, and they love each other so much, and that is really what keeps her going. Part of this world, this dystopian future, is that everyone has to take a test when they turn, I believe it's 17 or 18, and the result of this test, you get a score from 1 to 7, and it's actually tattooed on the back of your neck, and whatever your score is determines what you do with the rest of your life, whether you get a position high up in the government or whether you are a sewer cleaner. It just depends on how well you do on this test. The problem is that Kitty is dyslexic. She has a very, very difficult time reading, but she's very smart, but she had a very difficult time on the test, and she only got a 3. So she was going to try and run away, because they were going to send her to, this takes place in Washington, D.C., they were going to send her to Denver and have her do some really low menial job. And she was like, no, I'm going to enter one of the brothels and try and save up some money. I'm going to run away from this destiny. But they find her in this brothel. The government comes for her because there was one of the, they're called the Shields. They're kind of the police militia force that recognized her eyes, that her eyes looked very similar to the Prime Minister's niece, Lila, who had recently been killed in some sort of accident. So Kitty is offered the chance to become a 7, which is like the highest pinnacle of this whole culture. And so she thinks, oh, I could have a 7, and, you know, Benji's really smart, he's going to take the test any day now, he's bound to get a really great score, and will have a great life. But instead, they abduct her, they surgically alter her to look like Lila, so that she can pretend to be Lila, and the rest of the world doesn't have to know that Lila has died. So, that kind of sets things up a little bit. So now Kitty is basically in this completely different body. She has had to learn all of Lila's speech patterns, mannerisms, and she's had to get to know Lila's fiancé, Knox. And she also finds out that Lila had been getting involved in some, well, to the Hart family, some not-so-great things. She's been giving a bunch of speeches where she is condemning some of the things that her uncle has been doing. And we find out later that he actually had her killed. Not, she didn't just die in an accident. She was murdered. And now they have Kitty, who is her new stand-in, to pretend like everything's fine. It also turns out that Knox and Lila's mother, Celia, are part of this rebellion that Lila was giving these speeches for. I'm reading a lot of stuff where there's like this underground rebellion against the power. It's part of being a dystopian fiction nerd. But it's just what always happens in these books. But they're called the Blackcoats, this rebellious group. And so one thing, now that we're getting into book two, one thing that we learn in book one is that all of the criminals and anyone that is deemed not helpful to society, whether it's because they're criminal or whether it's because they are in some way mentally deficient or handicapped or what have you, if they are deemed to be inappropriate in this society, they're sent to this place called Elsewhere. And nobody knows where it is, except for the ruling class. And they... It's a really terrible place. It's basically this like large prison colony. Sometimes people are used as like target practice, like you would think of like a safari in Africa, only they're shooting at humans. They are using some of them for like organ donation, and it's a horrible place. So. Because of the things that Kitty had been involved in, she ends up being sent to Elsewhere. And she has to try and now navigate this new place while now having the appearance of someone who is their enemy. She still looks like the niece of the man who sent them all there, which does not grant her very many friends. But the thing that was fun with this was you hear so much about Elsewhere in the first book, and it's extremely ambiguous, and then it's extremely frightening. So now you actually get to experience it through the main character's eyes. The best thing about this book, there's several really good things about this book and about the whole series, but the fact that Kitty is such a really great character, and she's in such a weird situation. She's a strong female lead, but she's nowhere near perfect. She is extremely stubborn. There are several points where she is just ready to completely give up. So she doubts herself. She doubts the people around her constantly because with several of them, she has no idea what side they're on. But she keeps going, and she keeps finding this inner strength, whether it's from her, whether it's because she's, you know, living to help Benji or to find Benji again. But she's an incredibly relatable character in that regard because she's a fighter. She fights for everything because she came from such a disadvantage growing up, and now she's in this other place, again, looking like the enemy and having to try and convince these people that she wants to help them. Eventually, they have to fight to take over Elsewhere. And that's an enormous undertaking because they have nothing except numbers. So they have a lot of people, but they don't have a lot else. But the other thing that is really fun with this series is because, and again, this is another thing that you see a lot in dystopian stories, but just so many of the characters are ambiguous. Like Knox, for example. Knox is a very interesting character because first you meet him and he's one of the ruling class. So you think, okay, he's one of the bad guys. But then you find out he's really, really nice to Kitty. He knows that she's not Lila. He knows that she's brand new to this world and she has to learn everything. He helps her. He's very kind. Then you find out that he's part of this underground rebellion. Well, okay. Then he kind of, at many times, kind of seems like a double agent almost. Like, he keeps going back and forth between, well, is he really a minister's son or is he really a rebel? And for a lot of the book, you really don't know which way he's going. And sometimes he's really, really nice to Kitty. Other times he's really, really not. He's not patient with her and her concerns. And she questions him a lot, and deservedly so. He does not like being questioned. He is not used to being questioned because of his position in society. So, and there's a bunch of characters like this as well. There's very few that are just plain evil, although there are a couple. And Daxton Hart is one of them. He is the prime minister. He's the ruler of America, and he is awful. There's also a secret about him that I'm not going to give away here, but when you learn it, that just changes everything. So definitely check this series out. Again, this was Captive by Amy Carter, the second book in the Blackcoat Rebellion series. And over the next, I'm not sure exactly when I'll have the review for Queen, because I have several other books that I've recently finished that I need to get reviews written up and get them on the podcast as well. So once I finish Queen, you'll also get a review of that one a bit later. Okay, that is the end of the first episode of the Life with No Plot podcast. If you would like to send some feedback, or if you have any comments or questions, or you'd like to share teasers or anything from the top 10 topic this week, you can either leave comments over at the website, which is lifewithnoplotpodcast.wordpress.com. And the link for that will be in the show notes for this episode, as well as Goodreads links for all of the books that were discussed. And you can also email me at lifewithnoplot@gmail.com. Again, I welcome any comments, feedback, book recommendations. I love getting book recommendations, even if they sit on my TBR for a long time. I love getting book recommendations. I love hearing about what other people are reading. So if you're reading something good, be sure to let us know, and I will share what you're reading on the next episode. But until then, happy reading, and I'll see you next time. Bye.